The subject I really want to talk today has to do with our nation. And I think that probably is confounding to all of us as far as what's happening and what do we do about it. And the best I can say is that our nation is really in trouble. And unfortunately, the biggest risk is internal. It has nothing to do with outside attacks. It's failure within. And I think the thing that bothers me the most is that a lot of people don't even believe that we were founded as a Christian nation. Or even better, that we were providentially founded or formed by God. And their reasoning or their logic is that look how fallible, or they perceived how fallible our founding fathers were. And that makes me chuckle because that's like saying Jesus wasn't the Messiah because look how fallible the disciples were. And so it escapes me. Secondly, people that claim that obviously have not read what our founding fathers wrote or how they've designed the safeguards or the balance of power within the design of our government. But mostly, when they claim that we were not founded as a Christian nation, I believe that it denies the role that God played in our founding. Now, there are many examples, and in light of the constraints of time we have today, I'm only going to tell one story. And that has to do with an account of a battle that happened in Long Island. It was very early in the Revolutionary War, and Washington was on Long Island, which everybody knows is pretty much surrounded by water, and there was 8,000 of his soldiers, which basically at that point in time was our whole army. And of the 8,000, 3,000 of them were young recruits from Marblehead Bay that had never fired a musket. And what we see in the story and the accounts of people that lived through it was about the time the British had completely surrounded on the mainland there and they were about to attack and they were bringing ships into that harbor and they were going to blow them apart. And all of a sudden, a nor'easter came in and kept the ships from coming in and being able to complete the battle. And this nor'easter lasted for 3 days' time. And as the nor'easter left, a dense fog came in so that they couldn't even see, like from me to you. It was that dense. You could hear the British, and the British could hear the Americans on the island. What people don't realize is that those 3,000 men that had never fired a gun came from Marblehead Bay. They were expert at rowing boats. And so Washington decided at that point that he was going to take his army off the island and save them. And so all night long, back and forth across that 1 mile sound, they rowed. And they were able to row silently because they were within earshot. They were like from us to the back of the room of the enemy. And that fog lasted all night. And about 5 a.m., the sun started coming up. And they were afraid because they still had, I don't remember if the number was 1,000, but it was quite a few still, 2,000 that they had to take off. And that fog lasted. And it lasted until the last boat carrying Washington got out of shot range. And so, you know, we look at, yes, I believe that God had a hand in our founding. And it was providential. I also believe that this nation is degrading at an exponential rate. It just amazes me just how fast we're going the wrong direction. So I want to switch things a little bit here and talk about some of the accounts. I find myself trying to change from saying the stories in the Bible to accounts, because an awful lot of these things are true history. And when we say stories, people that are not in the faith take it, well, this is just fiction and this is not a real story. And, of course, the first one, it involves Noah. Now, at the time, and we find the story in Genesis 6, of course, the Lord was dismayed that he had made man and that they had become so evil. And he states in Exodus 6:3 that he's not going to contend with people for another 120 years. That he's had it. He's done with them. And fortunately, Noah finds favor with God. And so God instructs Noah to build the ark. And so that we know the story as far as that's what saves and is our roots for the, I'm getting tongue-tied here. those eight people were the only ones that were saved. And so you look at God's punishment for that, and he did blot out basically all the society at that time. And when you look at what was said in that their hearts were wicked and they were continuously thinking of evil. And I think of today's society, and I think, how is that not different than what we currently experience or see? When I look at all the things that are talked about in terms of what they think is right, or I look at the, quote, politically correct, and I look at what's happened in the society from the last 70 years or so. When I was in grade school, I mean, the problems that school teachers had were us running in the halls, speaking in class, talking out of turn, chewing gum, you know, maybe being late to class. You look at the trouble that schools have today or school teachers have today. It's assault. It's rape. You know, it's drugs. And our society is just, it's falling apart. Another story in the Bible that just astounds me is the one of Sodom and Gomorrah. And in that we find in Genesis 18, and we find that Abraham is talking to God, and while he's talking to God, he's asking him, would you destroy the righteous along with the wicked? And Abraham asked him, if he could find 50 good men, would he still destroy them? And God says no. And we know the story. It goes from the 50 to the 40 to the 30 to the 20 and finally to 10. And finally Abraham gives up and realizes there isn't any. Now in that time frame, it talks about how there was two men, and they were angels, and they left and they went down. And the story kind of jumps to the story with Lot, where they're viewed as visitors by the gate, and Lot brings them in so that they don't stay in the square for the night because the men are so evil. And of course, we know the story that the men attack and try to get the men that were staying in Lot's house. So, I mean, it's obviously the references are for homosexuality, and it points out just how bad it is. But when I look at the inroads that the homosexuals are having in our society today, we're supposedly 67% of the society of being Christians, and they're 1 to 3% of the population. And you look at how they're changing the laws and everything else, and you wonder, How is that happening? How is it that we're not the influence of the battle, winning the battle, I should say? And of course, we know the story. God comes in and destroys Sodom. And I could see that the problem with that, just like within Noah's time, that's basically what we see in our society today. Now, so let's talk today. Because what are the choices that we have? I see nothing but difficult choices from a standpoint of what do we do? How do we stop this? It seems so much bigger. And there's one more biblical story I'd like to bring in because I look at the time when Joshua went into the promised land, and they're in the conquest period where they're trying to take over Canaan. And if you remember the story about the Gibeonites, and this is in Joshua chapter 9, and what happens is the Gibeonites have heard about the story of Ai and... pardon? Yes, sir. Thank you. And so they're petrified. I mean, the Israelites have just basically wiped out these other much more powerful tribes. And so the Gibeonites become very deceitful and they pretend like they're from faraway land. And they pretend that they're not neighbors, but they want to be servants. And if the Israelites will allow them to be servants and not get killed. And the Israelites make one major mistake, and it's in verse 14 of Joshua 9. And in that verse, it basically states, "So the men of Israel took some of their provisions and did not ask counsel of the Lord." And so you wonder in these times that are very difficult or whatever, and the point being is what happened is they made a covenant with them. And then, because they had made a covenant with them, they wound up having to fight some battles and defending them, because their word at that point in time was their bond, and so they were required to do that. The point being is that when we get into difficult times, where do we go? What do we do for our direction? Now, I contend that if we look to the wisdom of man, we're in real trouble. The only place that we can truly look to is to the Lord. And right now we're facing an election in several weeks. Who do you vote for? I think my grandson, who said it, he's 18 years old. This is his first election he's ever going to get to vote in. I can remember back, of course, back then I was 21 years old. But that was something we look forward to. And he says to me, he says, "What choices do I have? You know, what do I do?" And I think the one thing that we cannot do as Christians is elect to stay away from and not vote. I make no claim that I'm going to advise you on how you should vote. I don't believe that the choices are... I wish I had different choices. But the thing that we need to do and what's put on my heart is, as Christians, we need to be praying to God. I think I am certainly not alone in this room when we think of that God is in control. As chaotic as it seems, God is in control. And who should we ask for direction? I believe he'll put in our hearts and our minds. You know, do I vote for the lesser of two evils? What if I don't vote for this person? Then am I not really voting for the worser of the two choices? I've heard all these things. And really what it boils down to is if we really believe that God's in control, we ought to be on our knees praying. God, please give me direction. How should I vote? It's stated that in the last presidential election, 25 million Christians didn't vote. How do people interpret it? What does that say? What if in this election, if you decide that you really can't vote for one of the two major candidates and that you would write in a candidate of someone that you believe would be acceptable to God or more acceptable. What if 25 million people did that instead of just not voting? What kind of conversations would be said, you know, after the fact? Oh, it wasn't that we weren't heard. It's that we didn't like the choices that were offered to us. I don't know what the answer is. I do know that the answer is to be on our knees and to pray. Because it's beyond my wisdom as far as what it is that we ought to do. But it's certainly not above along of God's. And I told these other stories about the biblical and about our founding fathers and the other things because this isn't the first time that we've had difficult situations or that we've had things that were above our intellect, if you will, as to what ought to be done. But you look at through history and you look at how did God direct his people that were faithful? Not people that were not faithful, but if they were faithful, I'm convinced that he will reveal to us whether he should vote for this person, or write this person in. And so, well, I'm aghast at the choices we do have. I know that the answer is not with us, it's with God. In 1 Corinthians 1:25, we find this saying, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. There's our source. There is the place that we need to go to for what we do. It's when I look at the parallel between our country and what happened to Israel, what happened to the Jews back in those times where they were exiled to Babylon or wherever they were. I believe that we can see evidence of God withdrawing his providential protection around us. I just hope that we can find and maintain 50 good men so we don't all get destroyed in this thing, that we continue to pray and God realizes that we're looking for him to him for direction. We're not looking at this society. This is not our home. We're just passing through. And so I beg you to make sure that regardless of whether you think the choices are good or bad, you pray about it and then vote your heart that God puts into your mind as to what it is that we ought to do or that you ought to do. Because he is in control. Now, whether it's going to be we're going to be banished for 70 years or 480 years or whatever it is, or whether we still have time to turn this around and start turning us back toward the right direction, I don't have that answer. But I sure would like that as a choice. I would still like that. And I don't believe that that's going to happen unless we get on our knees and unless we ask him for direction. And it's with that that we sing our song of invitation.